This is Ruth's Aggressive Podcast, right here, North South Connection Network, coming off of Unforgiven 2002. I have a brand new guest with me, somebody who has never been on the show in all of these 32, and now this will be number 33, these episodes that we've done. So I'll bring him in right from the get-go so we can start chatting, and that will be Mr. Ryan Everett. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, how's it going? Happy to be here.
Awesome, awesome. So, Ryan, my boilerplate question will be, since you are new, which, thanks for coming on. I'm always excited when I get somebody new. I try and get as many people who are interested in coming on as I can, because I like to just, it's part of the fun of the show, and having a rotating guest is, you know, just getting to talk to different people and get different opinions is fun. But anyway, so my standard question for those, if it's your first time in the pod, I'll ask you, where were you in 2002 as far as a wrestling fan? Were you still pretty locked in at this moment? Or
I was pretty locked in, but like at the same time cooling off a little bit. But for me at that time, cooling off meant not recording every Raw and SmackDown and watching it again the next day. So, I mean, I was still would definitely watch most of Raw, depending on, you know, if there was a good football game on, maybe I'd be switching back and forth. SmackDown, though, I pretty much watched pretty regularly also.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting aspect of this particular week, because I would say since I started the pod, this might end up being one of the starkest contrasts between a Raw and SmackDown since I've started. It's kind of, you know, I think this era is kind of known for that. But from what I've done so far, it hasn't really... I mean, SmackDown's kind of been, I would say, the better show quite a few times, but it hasn't been starkly different. And Raw's had some good ones, but I think this is the first where you're really starting to see the two shows separate and really come. You're starting to see the two identities form, for better or for worse. So it'll be an interesting one to break down. But it doesn't sound like you are. So you just went from being super hardcore to just hardcore. So which you're I'll right. say you're still you're still pretty into it. But we'll go straight into the notes here, Ryan, because and you chime in if you'd like to comment on any of these, because you may be familiar with a lot of this. But pretty decent amount of news for this week coming from the Observer. I guess it's just a hot time. But anyway, we'll start with Vince McMahon made a. This is just kind of a novelty one. I thought this one was funny because it says Vince McMahon made an offhand remark about ECW at the latest stockholders meeting. They got some people talking about the possibility of ECW being revived under the WWE umbrella. I won't get into everything that Dave says about this one, but I just thought it was interesting. Already in 2002, the idea of WWE ECW is kind of already being kind of tossed around the old noodle. He kind of gets into all that. The you know, the possible downfalls of that, and could he really pull it off? And it's interesting because it kind of ends up being what happens to it, saying like it's never going to be the same because you can't make it feel like an outsider product. And he even, you know, for to his credit, Meltzer even says it would probably work a lot better if they just did a few one-off ECW pay-per-views, which kind of is what ends up happening. That's the most successful thing they do with it. But yeah, just interesting to see it this far, this early, that it's already being kind of tossed around.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought it was really, because I think it was 04 they released the DVD, and I thought that, like, they were shocked at how well it did, and that's kind of what spurred the at least the first One Night Stand and stuff. So I'm surprised it was, this far back already.
Yeah, it could be one of those things where they had it in their head, but they were like, what's the point? And then maybe that, like you said, because I've heard the same story, that it's that DVD. So maybe it's kind of they always had it swirling around, and then that DVD came in, and maybe they it might have made them think, like, you know, maybe there's something to this. We might have something here. Anyway, some more notes from that same stockholders call. Just kind of gives you a state of where they're at. And again, it's just funny to see so much of this stuff that you feel like is a little ways down the line, but they already have it kind of – they already have the ideas going. Like the stockholders meet says something about going into movies, like low budget straight-to-video movies, which I think the first one was probably a few years after this. I think – wasn't See No Evil the first one, I want to say, with Kane?
I think that came out first on the Marine.
Yeah, which would still not be for a few years. So,
right.
Again, just another thing, them like these things that we think of as later down the line, they're already thinking about. And even this stockholders meeting apparently talks about something that would pretty much become the classics on demand, which would be kind of what would lead us eventually to the network. But just talking about making some sort of service where fans could view the old video library. But just with all this stuff, the common thread is just amazing how early a lot of this stuff is being, as early as late 02, a lot of these things are already being thought of and kind of the ideas are swirling. It's just interesting to me.
Yeah, it's kind of like I think Vince has always been looking for outside projects outside of wrestling, you know, and like the film studios and any sort of like programming that would be different than wrestling is something that he's always wanted to do, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Like anything to do with entertainment, because we are still less than a year into the, you know, them turning into the E. So I'm sure just symbolically in his head, calling entertainment is probably got to get more jazzed about it. But continuing on, Dave has some notes from OVW. He kind of runs down all the current guys and our girls in OVW and gives a brief description of them. So we have, I thought this was just interesting to hear who's in OVW, because these will be names we're probably going to see pretty soon and some that we probably will never hear of. So we have Charlie Haas, who he calls a good athlete who does some good moves, but isn't really ready yet. We have, I wasn't sure who some of these are offhand, because I would think some of these, maybe they did have some stint that I don't really remember, but Damaja, I don't remember who that was or if that was anybody.
He was one of the Bashams.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
I forgot which one.
Yeah, it must be Danny, because in here it has Doug Basham, as Doug Basham.
Okay, Damaja must have been Danny.
Yeah, so he says Doug Basham is a good talker, a good wrestler, and probably the most well-rounded guy, but a little bit generic. He also talks about Lance Cade, who he calls a young Barry Windham, Kevin Furtag, Travis Tomko, Matt Morgan, Sean O'Hara, Mark Jindrak, who seemed to kind of came from WCW. And he says that they're kind of struggling to pick up on the WWE style. He says Rob Conway is down there. Nick Densmore, who he says is a good worker, but doesn't really have the look that would fit in the WWE system. We'll see how they make his look work later on. Shelton Benjamin, who may be the most noteworthy of this entire bunch. Jackie Gata, who we have already seen on this podcast and quickly got shipped down to OVW. Yeah, after that debacle on TV, they quickly cut the cord on that. But Dave thinks he'll be back on TV soon, whether she can wrestle or not, just because of her look. We have Nova, who's with ECW, and of course, like I said, Doug Basham. But just interesting to hear all those names, and even with who they've already called up with Cena and Batista and everybody, that they still have quite at least a few people who are at least going to get a stint on the main roster soon enough. So they still have quite a few people in the works in OVW right now.
Yeah, this is kind of like the area you don't hear too much about, like, because, you know, the guys that don't, that haven't come up yet, I mean, Haas and Benjamin, and then I guess you would say Dinsmore are probably the only three guys that really made an impact of any kind. So it's kind of showing that they still have people down there, but I think this is where, like, the talent development kind of started to run a little dry.
Yeah, for sure. Like, this is, you have a few, it's, I would compare it almost to, like, maybe like the NBA draft. Like, once you get past the first, like, 10 picks or something, it's right. Like, you might score a few impact players, but a lot of it's just going to be, you know, they've already gotten their blue chippers. Right. And now they're just trying to see if there's anybody left. But anyway, we get a quick note about how TNA is going to be saved by the first instance of Panda Energy coming in to bail them out to help them surviving. A quick plug for TNA Never Dies here. They just returned on the North-South feed, so go check that out. We got Dave talks about Spanky, who's, of course, Brian Kendrick, who's going to be getting a tryout at WWE shows pretty soon, even though he's accepted a deal in Japan. So Dave thinks he'll only probably come if he can get a main roster spot and is not going to probably settle for the little amount of money he get paid in OVW. And then finally, I kind of talked about this when it happened, but he kind of confirms that the Bob Holly injury that happened in the Brock match where he got crushed on his neck is a pretty significant injury, and it's probably going to keep him out for quite a bit of time, which it does.
Yes.
We won't be seeing Bob Holly for quite a while, but that's pretty much it for the
I think SmackDown's doing okay without Bob Holly.
Yeah, you can say he's missed, but sorry you broke your neck up, Bob Holly. But to his credit, he did finish that match. I mean,
yeah,
if he's nothing else but tough, I guess. But anyway, we'll get Ryan. We'll go straight into our first show, which is going to be September 23rd, 2002, Raw. And a little bit of a change for Raw, Ryan. We're not actually going to come out with a big long promo. We're actually going to go more SmackDown style and start this off with a match, which I thought was particularly interesting coming off a pay per view. I feel like a lot of times they'd like to. I mean, it's typical that they go with the promo, but especially on a pay per view where you kind of had a major storyline development with Flair and Triple H. Yeah. You would think they would come right out of the gate with that, but I guess they're opting to not with those. I'm not really complaining. It's just not typically what they do. But instead, they come out the gate with a triple threat women's match for the title. Trish, of course, is the new champion, come off Unforgiven, and she will be facing Victoria and Molly in a triple threat match. So, of course, Molly and Victoria double team Trish to start, but that quickly kind of breaks down on them a little bit. Of course, even though these women are putting on a pretty good match in ring, of course, now we get the HLA chant, unfortunately. Just the crowd is not really interested, which kind of sucks. But they kind of – so Molly and Victoria kind of argue a little bit, but they go back to the double team on Trish. Molly, again, I thought Molly looked good at Unforgiven, and I think she looks pretty good here. She hits a nice little handspring, some good fast-paced action this match. They work a typical kind of, besides the double teaming, they work a pretty standard triple threat sort of formula, but they have a nice pace to it. Trish took a pretty sick bump. To me, this was kind of the spot of the match where Molly just dropped her outside. She just landed flat on the outside. I thought that was a pretty sick bump. But now Trish just kind of knocked out, so Molly and Victoria finally give up on the teamwork and go after each other. Victoria goes for a moonsault, and this is a beautiful moonsault. She misses it, but just she really got some nice elevation. It was really crisp. It actually reminded me of the Christopher Daniels, the BME, honestly. So
they were busting some big moves out.
Yeah, they were. They came in hot for this one on this opener. But Trish hops back in and she ends up getting a roll up. Molly reverses it, but then Trish reverses that and pulls her own roll up to steal it. But I agree with you, Ryan. I was kind of feeling this match. I thought it was a good opener. I was kind of pleasantly surprised. They got not a ton of time, but at least enough to kind of do some stuff. They felt like they were going for some big stuff, some nice spots. I thought it flowed well. Actually, with 2.5, Ryan, I enjoyed this as an opener.
Yeah, I actually went 2.5 also. I was, like you, I was very surprised to hear Trish's music start the show and not Triple H coming out for a 20-minute interview to talk about how he's the smartest man in wrestling.
course.
And I got lucky. I think I kind of avoided that overall this week, but maybe next week he'll talk about it. But the match itself, yeah, it was really good. Nice. You could kind of see here, I think, that they're transitioning from Molly being the feud for Trish to Victoria. JR at one point brought up how they didn't like each other when they were Muscle Magazine models. So I think that's the first time we've heard of a feud like that in wrestling. But yeah, I mean, it was a good, quick-paced match. Yeah, something I wasn't expecting, but pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, Victoria, I find, has looked pretty impressive in the little bit of time she's been in ring. She seems really athletic. Like, she doesn't come off, she's not a Jackie Gator by any stretch. You know, she comes right in and she looks really athletic. Like, if they are going to pivot, even though I was disappointed in how the Molly and Trish feud played out, not really their fault, but I wouldn't mind a Victoria Trish feud, because I think Victoria could really push Trish. And I look forward to it, but good opener. But we head backstage now. We have Book Dust, who have a VCR set up in the back to put on a show. To show the roster what Booker D calls Stank Wars, and it's just footage of last night at Unforgiven. The footage of Eric Bischoff getting the stink face from Rikishi. Nice. Gold Dust is always so ridiculous. Like, he's as it's happening, he gets more and more excited, and he eventually just starts humping the TV like in excitement. Just all these weird little Gold Dust things. Like, and then he reveals that he has a poster, and it's Eric Bischoff with very crudely like a old school Photoshop, where he just like cut and pasted a picture of Rikishi's butt and put it on right Eric on. Bischoff's yeah. face. but then, of course, Rico, who is Bischoff's little stoolie, comes out, and he's going to snitch on him. And he goes to Eric Bischoff, and who Eric Bischoff is not the most happy with Rico. He blames Rico for even letting that happen at the pay-per-view. But then Rico tries to get back in his good graces by snitching on everyone. Any thoughts on this before you head out to the ring for the rest of this whole ordeal, Ryan?
Well, I had to take note of the group of the roster that is shown here. It's Bubba Ray, Kane, The Big Show, Jeff Hardy, and Steven Richards, who, I mean, I guess Bubba, Kane, and Hardy are faces, and Big Show and Steven Richards are heels, but they're fine hanging out together for this moment, even though the next match we see would actually go against that. But yeah, it was fine. You know, I have to say, you know, you talked about it on the Unforgiven podcast. Rikishi really gets deep in there with that stink face. It is one of the longest ones. And I think, you know, I'm sure that Vince probably pulled Rikishi aside before he went out there and was like, make it good. Make it put your ass up his face.
Yeah.
Because he was in there deep.
Yeah, I think they even comment. It might be later in the show, but I think JR even comments or something. That was the longest, or it might be on SmackDown. What on some commentary part of these shows, somebody makes a comment like, "This is the longest stink face that's ever happened." And I love even Stephanie getting there, like pulling up, pulling at his thong up his crack to like expose more cheek. Even she's like into it. But I always enjoyed the Book Dust, Booker T and Goldust nonsense. They're really good at this type of stuff. And I just love all the weird stuff Goldust does on the side. Like, it's like all these little subtle, weird things he's always doing. I just kind of love it. But anyway, Eric Bischoff heads to the ring. He's, of course, pissed about Unforgiven and everything that's been going on and getting stink face. And he's also upset that no one on the Raw roster helped him. He reveals now, he throws us in really quick, but kind of a major development in the whole brand wars thing is that all the contracts are going to be frozen, meaning that they can't have any more talent like going back and forth between shows. If there's going to be any movement, it has to be an approved trade, which I thought was a pretty smart move. You don't want to have, I think now that they've maybe settled, and we'll see a few more moves in a second, the last few things they moved around. But I thought this was smart of them to work this in, because you don't want to constantly have people moving back and forth, because it was kind of getting to the point where if they kept going with it, it would make the two brands kind of, the brand split insignificant if guys jump back and forth. So I thought this was a pretty good move to end the people bouncing from show to show and that sort of thing. But anyway, he calls out Booker, who says he thought it was funny. So Booker's not backing down from Eric Bischoff. Booker T says HLA now stands for huge lumpy ass, because that's what was in Bischoff's face. and he calls Eric's breath heinous like a fat man's anus. So a lot of Booker T throwing some one-liners at Bischoff, who's of course furious. So he gets 3-minute warning to come out and attack, but Booker T is actually able to fight them off. So Booker T looks pretty good here because most people get destroyed by them. Rico shows up, and eventually the 3-on-1 is too much for Booker. Here comes Goldust to get taken out too. He tries to help, but is not really too successful. And then we find out that Rico is going to face Booker T later. Jericho shows up towards the end of this. Oh, sorry. We then head backstage, and Jericho shows up. He's talking to Bischoff about how pissed off he is about Goldust insulting Fozzy, which we had mentioned in that promo. He, I forget the exact joke he made. I don't know if you took note of it, Ryan, but he made some joke about...
Something about, like, how it was... something about how Fozzy sucks. I don't remember.
It was some cheap dig at Fozzy. I remember like comparing to Rikishi's ass or something. Who knows? But he's mad at Goldust for that. So we're gonna get So Eric Bischoff agrees, but he puts the Intercontinental title on the line, which Jericho was not really asking for. So Jericho's a little upset that his title is gonna be on the line. But we'll get Goldust and Jericho later in the show. What did you think of this whole segment with Bischoff kind of going to this conflict with Booker T, because now it sort of seems like we're going to be moving Book Dust into a feud maybe with Rosie and Jamal at this point?
Yeah, I think it's good because it's Rosie and Jamal. They got to have something to feud with on Raw now. Like they need to, like they had their stuff with Billy and Chuck, and like they still really haven't been feuding with anyone on Raw. So Booker and Goldust are the most established face team, so I think it makes sense for them to go into a feud with them.
Yeah, the only thing I was a little disappointed is just that it kind of seemed for a while that we're building to maybe Booker T and Goldust winning the titles from the Un-Americans, but it seems like we'll get to it in a second, but it looks like the Un-American stock is slowly falling, their positioning on the card, so I think maybe they're just kind of, they look like they're almost done with the Un-Americans. And I think this is at least a high profile thing, because if it involves Bischoff, it's going to be high profile for them to do, which I think they deserve because they've been kind of a highlight of the Raw mid card.
I think like the way the tag titles, the way they see the Un-Americans right now with the tag titles, they see this as even as higher than that, I think.
It's just kind of indicative of this whole, a lot of this time period is just them, like everything doesn't stick a lot. They kind of pivot to different things pretty quickly, for better or for worse. We'll continue on, and now we're going to get a Big Show versus Jeff Hardy match. So, of course, we get not much of this match, Ryan. Show, of course, slaps him around, kind of toying with him, doing some... honestly, sort of lazy big man offense. Like, I think Show, for his physique lately, and you know, maybe not being at his peak physically, I think a lot of his stuff he's been okay in ring. But this match, I thought you're really starting to see him just kind of, I don't know, slog around. Like, he does a few things, but he does a lot of real cheap, like I'll call it giant offense, like walking on Jeff, just too impressive. Like, Jeff gets a little bit here, like kicking him in the knee, kicking him in the head. He does the Swanton, which of course gets barely even a two. Big Show just throws him off after, which they keep, I don't know what it is. I don't know if this is like a punishment thing for Jeff because of his personal issues or what it is, but this is like the second time I've noted on the pod of people kicking out of the Swanton. And in situations, like not big matches or anything, it almost just seems like they're kind of... Barrett is finisher a little bit, where they just have people obviously just not even really like close near falls or anything. He's just like, it's just like a transition move, just kind of weird to do that to his finisher. But anyway, after that, it's just complete destruction by Big Show. He choke slams him and ends Hardy. And I just don't, I want a star. It was essentially a squash match. I didn't really see the point. And man, Jeff Hardy's stock has really fallen from when he was in that ladder match with Undertaker back in the summer.
Yeah, the last thing I gave it a star, and I put, what was the point of this match? They don't talk about it at all, like why they're having this match. Lawler, the whole match, is talking about how they're going to have dancing divas later. It's just, it's a really weird, out-of-nowhere match that you know, sometimes it's fine to have matchups with two guys that aren't feuding, but explain it, or explain at least what one of them is doing. Like, neither of them have a storyline. Yeah, it was really felt like a waste of time.
Yeah, I don't think it accomplished much of anything besides killing time. It's just, you know, you kind of, Jeff loses again. He's just slipping. Big Show's not doing anything, so it's not like the win's really going to help him. It was just, I don't know. The match wasn't particularly entertaining. Like, yeah, there was really
you even could have said, like, both of these guys have been struggling as of late. You know, one of them wants to get some momentum, at least say something like that, but they didn't even go that deep.
No, it's like, yeah, 100% like filler in a bad way, which is a common problem lately on Raw, where they just, it, a lot of times just seems like they're trying to kill time to get to other things, and they don't make the most of all their, you know, they don't make the most of every match. Not every match accomplished anything, and this was one accomplished nothing. So we'll keep moving because not much else to say about it. We get a video of a few weeks ago to remind us. I basically said to remind us who Chris Nowinski is, because we haven't really seen him much lately, but he's now in, they show him in a classroom, very heavy Dean Douglas vibes here in the classroom, where he's like a teacher, and he calls out Tommy Dreamer to teach him and says that he's going to teach him to not mess with a Harvard grad. So no mention of his Molly thing. So we can pray that that whole thing has been dropped. Hopefully that does not come back, but we'll come back to him in a second. But we get a really awesome No Mercy commercial that I thought was really cool, with Pete Rose, and then they have all these kids coming in. They're dressed as different wrestlers and stuff, and he's like being an asshole to him, and then finally Kane shows up and just goes after him. So I thought it was awesome, the Pete Rose reference. Really cool. I like the acknowledging that No Mercy is during Halloween, which is kind of, in this era, sort of a unofficial. Like, they don't lead into it a lot, but we'll see pretty soon their way of leading into the No Mercy thing, the Halloween, if you will, aspect of it in the coming weeks. But I don't know. I enjoyed this a lot.
It's a horror story, I'll give you that much.
Yeah, I enjoyed this commercial. It was really fun. I really popped when I saw Pete Rose pop out. I had kind of forgotten this one.
I was glad that it's still, because sometimes it seems like commercials are hit or miss if they are kept intact. I was glad this one was. It's one I remember from the time.
Yeah. But we head back to Chris Nowinski's classroom, and we see it's Tommy Dreamer. He shows up after Nowinski called him out. Of course, he has his kendo stick. He goes after Nowinski with it. He throws a bookcase on top of him, and he kind of picks him up, and there's sort of that like styrofoam looking drop ceiling stuff. He puts his head through that. Chris comes back though and low blows him, but then Dreamer comes back and just cracks him across the face with a kendo stick. Just vicious. That looks sick. Like,
yeah,
he just smacked the piss out of him. I don't really like Nowinski, and I think this was, I wasn't expecting it from Dreamer and Nowinski. I don't know if the feud's going to light anybody's world on fire, but as a segment in a vacuum, I thought this was a nice little hardcore brawl here. Like, that's a sick shot with the cane, him throwing the bookcase. I didn't mind this, actually.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. Like, I liked the, well, not really atomic drop. He just, when you said he lifts him into the ceiling, that was kind of different than, yeah, that cane shot at the end. It's no wonder that Nowinski only lasted about 2 years with like 8 concussions or whatever he ended up having.
He crushed him. Like, oh my goodness. Like, cause just, there's no way to like, to fake that, you know, there's no way to, I mean, he just smacked him with a stick, you know. It was,
yeah,
I don't know. It almost felt like a kind of proving yourself sort of spot or something. I don't know, but it was vicious. But so we'll see how that plays out. But we'll now head to the ring for another interesting matchup here, as we're going to have Stevie Richards versus, so earlier I forgot to mention, Bischoff mentions that he has two big signees with his last minute deals that he got in before the deadline of where they froze all the contracts and everything. And so his first signee, we find out, is going to be Randy Orton, who's kind of been having some good show legs on SmackDown, but really hasn't done much of anything. He's kind of just been going out, looking like a solid performer, but not really doing anything of note, no real feuds or anything. But he's going to be facing Stevie Richards. JR intros Randy, who has made the jump to Raw. They actually, I should mention, yeah, JR comes to the ring. They do a full on, like, JR gets in the ring and puts him over as being Bob Orton's son and that sort of thing, Bob Orton Jr.'s son. So kind of really playing into the whole the legacy thing. So he's very face still, just like he was on SmackDown, yeah. Like slapping hands and everything, just full on white meat baby face Randy Orton, which, as obviously I said before on here, is funny to look back on. But he's pretty fluid in ring, like he's been shown on SmackDown. He gets a nice roll up in the corner, I thought was good. He sells a lot for Stevie, like he gets thrown in the camel clutch. They already, right from the get-go, though, they're addressing his the whole military thing, how his stint in the military. Like, JR says something like, well, he got thrown in the brig, but he got out of it, and he's moved past it, and blah, blah, blah. So they're already kind of trying to get ahead of that in case, you know, it would, I guess, get in the meter or whatever, who knows. But they trade a lot of near falls, and then Orton finally gets his crossbody, which looks really nice. Again, Orton looks super athletic, just like he has on SmackDown. He's pretty crisp at ring for a rookie. Yeah, solid back and forth. The whole purpose is just to put Orton over, but I wouldn't call it really a squash match. It was just kind of a solid few minutes of action just to establish Randy. And they were really, really gushing over Randy on commentary, I should say, too. But I went 2 stars on it, Ryan. I thought it was just a good little solid match.
Yep, we're in lockstep again. I also went 2 stars. Yeah, Randy Orton baby facing all the way. Richards controls for a little bit, and they kept calling him Steven Wacko Richards, which I don't know. Maybe that's been like something developing on heat or something, because
yeah.
I don't really remember him even being on Raw, much less being called the Wacko. And he hits the Stevie kick, and, you know, Orton's able to kick out of that and then hits the nice crossbody. So, yeah, I thought it was a good, like, showcase for Orton. 2 stars.
Yeah, what do you think of the move of him coming this from SmackDown, I should say?
I think it's interesting because he, like you said, he hasn't really shown much personality yet, and that seems like something more for just a guy who goes out and wrestles for SmackDown. Of course, he ends up developing a personality on Raw, so maybe it wasn't. Obviously, I think we could say it was the right move, being able to develop on Raw. But, yeah, I was kind of surprised. And I know he doesn't have many matches until he gets injured, but that's really what helps change his path, I would say.
Yeah, I get it, too. It definitely was. I could see it both ways, but I don't think it's a bad move. I think they need to shore up Raw a little bit. Like, when you watch SmackDown, you don't feel like there's any...
Yeah, the mid-card is Tommy Dreamer and Steven Richards.
Yeah, because... And then SmackDown, you kind of think of it two ways, where you could say, well, if you're going to get him over as a wrestler, he has a ton of people to work with. But then you could also think, well, is he just going to get overshadowed? Because he's never going to... You know, his in-ring stuff is probably not going to be good enough to hang with the level of in-ring work on SmackDown. So maybe he'll shine a little bit more here, where they seem to be more... in need of kind of maybe killing some time or filling time on Raw, it seems like, especially based on our next segment, which is going to be the Union Underground performing the Raw theme live. Now, I don't know about you, Ryan, but I thought it was odd to have this at this point of the show. Since it is the Raw theme song, I would have thought maybe you'd do this at the beginning. I don't know. I mean, I guess they wanted to, maybe they didn't think that would hook people into the show or something, but I thought it was weird to have it mid-show. Seems like more of an intro thing, since it is the theme song.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been fine if they just did, like, just a hard camera shot right to them at the beginning and just announce them and have them sing at the end. It's weird to, like, chop up the show with them in the middle.
Yeah, like, just have them performing the song in the middle. It just, again, makes it seem like they're trying to kill time, because I feel like by putting in the middle of the show, you're going to kill more time. They certainly have some 2002, like, new metal hard rock band fashion going on. Like, there's one guy, I forget if he was, like, the guitar player or the bass player or something, but he had dreadlocks, like, white guy dreadlocks and, like, a cowboy hat. They looked, they looked straight out of... like, they would have been on Ozzfest or something in 2002 for sure. They had some
yeah, straight out of central casting for like a horror movie has like a metal band there playing it like a barn or something.
Yeah, that's a perfect description of the Young Underground. But I do like the song, at least for the purpose of this. Now, the sound is not great, as it never usually is on these type of things. But so the other part of this is they have the divas dancing. And it's just it's so weird because like the Yuya Underground is like this kind of metalish new metal band. And so you have like, I love Jackie because she could tell like she didn't know what the hell to do. She was like, what this, is this?
This was not her usual music to dance to, I don't think.
Yeah, she was just like, I don't know how they want me to dance this. So I think she just decided, I'm just going to act stupid. Like, I think she was just like, I'm going to do the most ridiculous dance moves that don't fit to this. Like, I don't even care. And then they had Stacy dancing like she was like a cage dancer or something at a nightclub. Which, again, neither one of them really fits because they're playing this, like, hard rock music. It's nothing anybody's really dancing to. So
it was kind of odd. Yeah, I wonder, like, who decided, like, okay, we're going to have, like, most of the people making the decisions have heard the Roth theme music, I would hope. So, who thought, like, we got to have the divas out there dancing during it, outside of, like, I don't know, maybe they gave Jerry Lawler the opportunity to book, and that's what he decided to do?
Maybe they thought if they didn't have close-ups of Stacy's butt that people would change the channel. I don't know. I feel like if maybe more casual people were flipping through, they would see this and probably just flip. Like, you know, like I feel like my dad's a person who like he doesn't watch wrestling really, but like he'll throw a Raw on sometimes just for, you know, whatever. But I feel like if my dad went through and he saw like the Union Underground, he'd be like, oh, I don't think I'm going to watch it this week.
Yeah.
He'd probably just flip through. But if he saw Stacy Keibler, he might put the remote down. So maybe that was their thinking, that the Union Underground needed some extra juice to get through this. But they also do some sick blurring effects towards the end of this segment. But yeah, very strange to have middle of the show. Again, just makes me feel like they're trying to fill up this 2 hours with something.
Right. Yeah. Like it wasn't great, but could Jeff Hardy and Big Show have gone 7 minutes maybe? And
yeah,
maybe got a little something better there. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess maybe they were pushing that album, too. I want to say that was part of this, like, Forcible Entry, I think they plug here.
Yeah, so. And I think this was when they were, I remember around this time, at least in one of the magazines, they were talking about how they were getting ready to launch SmackDown Records.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe they were, like, part of it, and I'm not sure, trying to develop that more.
Yeah. Who knows? But we now go to what I would have probably assumed would have started the show, but I guess they're doing this as like the thing to start off the second hour, if I had to guess. And it's Ric Flair coming out to explain his actions for Unforgiven, how he seemed to side with Triple H and help Triple H win. He says that Triple H was right to call him pathetic because that's what he has been. He started, hey, what do you think he's going to say? He cared more about the fans. Classic heel thing to say. He cared more about the fans and what these young guys in the back. He was trying to give them advice. Nobody would listen to him. So he's wasting his time. But then he knows that Triple H grew up wanting to be him and idolizing him. And so he's going to mentor him and show him the way. And he wants to end his career the same way that he started. At the top, you know, riding the limos, living the high life like he did back in the 80s, basically. So, of course, this brings out an angry RVD who comes out with his ribs taped, pissed off over what happened last night. But Triple H jumps him from behind, clotheslines him in the back of the head as he's coming down the ramp and grabs the mic and says that Rob can't win. And out of nowhere, our savior here is going to be Bubba Ray Dudley, who comes out to help. And they go after him until finally he gets a chair and chases off Flair and Triple H. Not surprising. I think you kind of knew where this was going. It wasn't like this was some big shock. Flair's motivation, I should say, did not come off as any big shock to me. But you kind of knew this was going to be. They really were hammering it in the build to this.
Yeah, it's just kind of what you would have expected. They didn't, you know, and sometimes that's fine. You know, you don't have to make the most complex storyline for everything. It was good enough, and, you know, Ric Flair, hopefully this is what he needs to. Well, he's kind of turned the corner since he's been back to just wrestling. So hopefully this helps keep him kind of focused and on the right path.
Yeah, and I get the whole criticism of this is like, well, this is just Triple H wanting Flair to kiss his ass or whatever and tell him he's great. But I think in the storyline, it makes good enough sense, you know, that Flair, I don't think it's a bad spot for him to, you know, be kind of Triple H's manager playing that role. I don't think it's the worst thing in the role, but in the world. But we'll get more into this in a second. So we head backstage, and Bubba is livid with Coach backstage. He says that this is a fan show. It's not the Triple H and Flair show. RVD says that they should kick their asses. Eric Bischoff comes in and cuts them off and says that it's his show. It's not the fan show, which, of course, gets him some heat. And he sets up a tag match later. So we'll get Bubba Ray and RVD versus Triple H and Flair later in the show. So we'll get to how that all plays out in the second. But before that, we will go to Jericho and Goldust. Of course, the match that was set up earlier when Goldust trashed Fozzy, which got Jericho upset. We start off, Jericho gets the advantage after some back and forth with a chin lock. Goldust finally gets back in it, goes for the curtain call, but ends up getting reverse. Goldie comes back. He hits that nice snap power slam and a lot of his signature stuff, like the drop uppercut that he usually does. Y2J comes back, gets a bulldog, but he gets thrown into the buckle. Goldust goes for the Shattered Dreams, but the ref ends up stopping him. Jericho hits almost like an RVD style, like top rope kick, and then puts Goldust in the walls to end it. So pretty crisp, like you would expect from both of these guys. Both are good in ring, and if you just give them a few minutes, they're going to give you a solid match. But at the same time, it never really went to any kind of anything past what I would call decent or solid. Like, they never really kicked it up to the next level. They just kind of went in there, worked a pretty basic match, which for these guys is good enough for 2.5 stars for me, because they're both pretty crisp in ring.
Yeah, I like this match. I ended up going a smidge higher, 3 stars. Just nice back and forth, Matt. Like you said, these two guys go out and, you know, given enough time, they'll do something. They'll do at least a good match. Maybe more time or more of a story could have gotten a little better. But I liked how Jericho won clean. I always like a good heel, clean defense of a title. So that was nice to see. And yeah, just a good match. Keeps Jericho up.
Yeah. This is a match that did stick in my head during SmackDown, and we'll get to it when we see, I think, what you could argue is guys on SmackDown who are of a similar, you know, I would think level in ring, and what they kind of do when they get time like this, I think is a little bit, and that was kind of in my head when I was watching this. I was thinking, you know, if this was on SmackDown, I feel like you would get a little bit more out of these two guys. They might get more time, and they might have a little more intensity, and maybe on SmackDown they do get to that other gear because it's just kind of more what SmackDown's about. It's just, you know, it's hard to not compare the two shows, but it's just kind of in my mind with this. It was just kind of stuck with me. But
right, but then you wouldn't have Union Underground performing, so.
Yeah, we could. Wouldn't want to not have that. Yeah, let's just take it, you know, because I feel like these are two guys who are super capable. And it wasn't bad by any stretch. But, again, when we get to SmackDown, we'll see guys at a similar position. And what they do is a little bit elevated, I think. But anyway, we'll go to our next match, which is going to be our tag team champions, the Un-Americans, Christian and Storm, versus Kane and Hurricane, who ends up being our second signing from SmackDown, who Kane reveals as his mystery partner for this match because he didn't have one coming in or was kept a secret. And so they're kind of going with this, I guess, Kane and Kane. You could think of it in that way. But anyway, so our two big signings were Hurricane and Randy Orton, which, again, is solid, but nothing like earth-shattering as far as our last few jumps from roster to roster. But anyway, Hurricane starts off. He comes in hot. He hits some neck breakers. They do some cool double team stuff. Kane launches him into the Un-American. So real hot babyface sequence to start to get the crowd behind him. But of course they have Regal on the outside. He helps turn the tables by getting a few cheap shots on Hurricane. And now Hurricane starts to get worked over. I didn't think this was the greatest heel kind of heat sequence by Storm and Christian, who, you know, I like, but I feel like they've done better. And especially like, I don't know. I just feel like it was kind of a weak heat sequence. They didn't look particularly focused or vicious in this. It kind of just, don't know, I wasn't impressed by it. But anyway, Kane comes back in off the hot tag. He gets a super high back body drop on, I think it was Christian that took it, but a lot of elevation on that one. He looks like a beast in here. Regal and Tess get ejected by the ref, and Kane gets knocked out. Things are starting to break down a little bit. Kane gets knocked out, but the Hurricane is able to survive a near fall, and they come in and do stereo chokeslams because, of course, the Hurricane does the chokeslam also, and they're actually going to be a new tag team champion. So, cool moment, I think. The Un-Americans really weren't doing anything. Like I said it earlier, their stock has been falling quite a bit. It almost seems like they're kind of done with the whole Un-American deal at this point. I don't know. They haven't had a very strong title reign anyway. You know, not the greatest title match you're ever going to see or the most built up or greatest feud or anything. But, I mean, it's not like much was going on with anyway. And I think Hurricane and Kane could be a pretty cool team. Though my biggest thing is, I don't know, I felt like the tag titles should have been coming to Booker T and Goldust. I feel like it felt like they were building a story of them finally getting on Americans, but they kind of dropped that. But as a match, I give it 2. I actually didn't think Christian and Storm, this was their greatest performance, but I really like the energy from both Hurricane and Kane in this one. And I think they're a fun little duo. I went 2 stars. The match was okay.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. It was a decent enough tag match. I like Kane and Hurricane. It kind of reminds me of Kane and X-Pac.
Mm-hmm.
Where you could have, yeah, you know, the small guy get beat down. Kane comes in. He's great for a hot tag. I mean, even 10 years later with Team Hell No, it's a good formula for Kane. Just have him sit on the apron and then come in and clean up. And it's worked well for him. Works well here. I like the stereo choke slams. That was kind of nice for it to once pay off for Hurricane. He's usually trying it on like the Big Show or something. But just good, nice, solid tag match. Nothing earth shattering, but good enough.
Yeah, we could hope. I'm not going to hold my breath or anything, but I'm hoping we do something with the tag titles. But again, not going to hold my breath. But and I'm always down for Hurricane getting the spot because he's really good. I've really grown. He's grown on me too in doing this pod, just seeing him on TV week to week. Like, he's always good for him. He always throws in some cool stuff in his matches and has nice energy. I think they'd be cool. And as we'll see here, they're a pretty fun little kind of goofy pairing. And so we go backstage and Hurricane speaks with Terry and explains why he and Kane are a perfect match. They both have masks. They both have choke slams. And Kane comes in and says that he picked Hurricane because he's a freak like him and freaks are cool. So you're kind of starting to see that they're trying to channel this like they were before he got injured.
Right.
It was something they were pushing with Kane before he got injured, trying to show him as a little bit more of a character, as a normal person, and giving him some, I don't want to say comedy stuff, but more of a lighthearted personality, I guess. And that's, you could tell they're trying to push that pretty hard right here. They're almost, I would compare it to a similar thing. They're trying to push them as the same sort of team as Booker T and Goldust. It's kind of this goofy team, like an unlikely pairing that the crowd's going to get behind, which I think it
goes. Right.
But Kane kisses Terry, which was a little a strange moment here. I guess it's trying to show he's like feeling confident or trying to sow his oats or something. But that part was a little weird.
Yeah, that was, I guess freaks are cool and freaks randomly sexually assault coworkers.
Yeah. Yes. I could have lived without that, but I did enjoy them. I especially liked Hurricane explaining like how they both have choke slams, they both have masks. I was like, he's not wrong, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we pivot now to Coach, who's with the losers, who said that the titles were stolen, of course. And then Regal actually says that it was their own faults because they don't need a whine like this, like Americans. They just need to come up with a plan. And then he tells Coach to piss off. So we get some angry Regal trying to fire up the Un-Americans. We'll see. We'll see if the Un-Americans make a comeback. But again,
yeah, Just watching this, it's like, it's a shame that I know when they started it was strictly like Canadians, but it would have been nice if in July and August Regal was with the Un-Americans as at least their mouthpiece instead of, you know, doing his palling around with Chris Nowinski and stuff. That he should have been here from the get-go. I think he's out of those four guys, he's easily the best speaker and might have been able to juice things up a little bit more.
Yeah, I feel like with a faction like that, it's tough when you start to, unless you want to really make them strong, it kind of has a pretty short shelf life, because once they start to feel like they're not much of a threat, and then we've talked about a lot since they've shown up, you know, I've talked about it with different guests on here, like, you know, it is a very kind of, even by 2002, kind of, I think, an antiquated sort of shtick. And so between them not being really booked super strong or dominant or anything, and then with it being sort of a heavy-handed gimmick for this time period with the super heavy un-American stuff, I just feel like all that combined is kind of making their shelf life kind of, you know, it's kind of like they came in, they did something, and it seems to be fading now. So I don't really remember how long they last, but I feel like it's I feel like it's not going to be much longer, but we'll see.
Yeah, I don't think they stick around too much more.
Yeah. All right. So now we go to another another match, which I guess has some kind of storyline behind it or heat. It's going to be Rico versus Booker T, presumably because Rico ratted him out early in the night. And so Bischoff set this up so Rico could get back at Booker T. But it doesn't really work out too well for Rico. His big push seems to be getting be very short-lived, because he comes in, he hits a few kicks, but then it's all Booker T. Just whips his ass and ends it with the scissors kick. The match was all but about 2 minutes. I want a star on it. It was essentially a squash, just Booker T crushing Rico.
Yeah, I went a star just for Booker's energy, at least. And they did mention how we might see a Rico Rooney, which I thought was pretty humorous.
Rico Rooney. Yeah, so Rico not looking super impressive, and he seems like he's just going to be fodder, like a little stooge for Bischoff, which is fine. Put Booker T over, I guess. All right, so we had, but after the match, 3 minute warning come out. They attack immediately. They actually give Booker T the big splash this time. Goldust comes in again, just like he did earlier. He comes in and clears house and shatters Rico's dreams, kicks him in the balls. But then while he's doing that, 3 minute warning come back, has some time to recover, and then they destroy him too. This was okay, but it did feel a little bit repetitive, because I feel like we got, maybe 3 minute warning didn't stand tall in the first segment, but essentially it wasn't much different from what we saw earlier between all of these parties. So to me, it felt a little repetitive, like we had saw this earlier in the show.
Yeah, I think we got it now. They have 3 minute warnings feuding with Booker and Goldust. They're really shoving it down our throats.
Yeah, like the only difference is they came out on top a little bit more, but that could have happened earlier and, you know, to the same result. So again, it's just more instance on the show of where I feel like they're just trying to fill time. And it's not always a good thing when you notice them trying to fill time. Like, I don't want to be thinking of them killing time while watching the show, which is, I think pan out in the our overall thoughts of the show. But anyway, we have Eric Bischoff backstage. He's scolding them, and he scolds Goldust and Booker T as they're trying to recover from the beating. And he says that next week they're going to face Rosie and Jamal in a tag match. And Booker T tells Eric Bischoff that he is what he eats, asshole. So again, even after getting his ass beat, Booker T is not backing down from his Bischoff getting the stink face jokes, which I kind of enjoyed. I kind of enjoyed him, you know, not backing down. But again, obviously this is the feud that they're pushing. But anyway, we now head to RVD, who tells Bubba that he's Zen. He's not dispassionate, because that's kind of what Triple H has been putting on him, is that he doesn't care about the title and so on and so forth. And they took everything from him, and he has nothing left to lose, which we'll see how that plays out in this match. Some would argue that they took a lot of his heat away, which we'll maybe see in a second. But anyway,
no,
we'll
go not to the Triple match. H.
I know. Aaron George is going to be I had Aaron George in mind when I was watching this whole deal here. But anyway, we go to the match. Triple H and Flair versus Bubba and RVD. So by the time they get through all the entrances, this match, there's really not a ton of time. So you kind of know this is going to be pretty quick, but, again, and I don't want to, I'm trying not to read too much into this, but from what I've seen before, it just felt like RVD's reaction from the crowd was a little muted, because normally he's super over, the crowd's super into him, and he's supposed to be facing Triple H, who's his hated heel. But to me, his pop seemed a little bit subdued. Bubba to me looked very out of place here with these guys, just if nothing else, just physically. Like, you know, even compared to Flair, like, you know, he just doesn't really look like he's in the. And then Triple H and obviously RVD are like physically, you know, super impressive. And then even Flair, I don't know, he looked a little out of place just from this high on the card, physically, the whole thing. But they start kind of slow. Rob finally gets his hands on Flair and lays in a few kicks on him. Triple H comes in and cuts it off as King. While this is happening, King and JR kind of debate Flair's decision and his motivation as to why he did this. Of course, King kind of understands and JR thinks it was, you know, dishonorable or whatever. Bubba comes back in. He gets a little bit of offense. I thought even at this point in the match, it was kind of slow and the crowd was not really getting into it, especially considering that they only have a few minutes. You know, this is the end of the show. They only have about 5 to 7 minutes. They really weren't doing much to kind of work at any sort of pace that you would expect in a main event on TV where you're not getting a ton of time. Like, I don't know. The crowd wasn't into it. Like I said, RVD's heat seems a little bit dampened, like it's not what it was. They do the was up, but a little variation where instead of doing a headbutt, Rob uses his legs. They get the tables. They set it up, They put Flair on the table. Rob's going to give him the frog splash, but Triple H pushes him off the top rail, which allows Flair to roll up the tights and get the pin. We'll talk about the post-match in a second, but as a match, I really didn't enjoy this one that much, Ryan. I thought it was, especially considering, like, with RVD, whose matches usually have so much energy, and so, I don't know, part of this was he was injured, but they really didn't play into that, honestly, all that much in the match. It just felt kind of dull and plodding. I wasn't impressed with this, and I only went a star and a half. It's kind of a disappointment.
Yeah, I thought the same. It was, like, RVD's injury, like, all he would hit a move and then he would hold the ribs. It didn't really affect him while he was doing stuff. It was just afterwards he'd be holding them. And yeah, it's kind of, it was slow going and not, and I think, I don't know, like, maybe the fans could tell this wasn't going to continue with RVD and they were thinking, oh, now Bubba's the top face, or maybe. I think in the back of their head, some of them might have been like, well, when's Shawn Michaels going to come back? Because they've had he's appeared since SummerSlam, right? Didn't he have an interview?
Yes, he went in the building. Yeah, he had that satellite interview thing.
Right. So I think by doing that, you kind of set it up that he's going to come back eventually. So maybe people were like, well, this is just placeholder till Shawn Michaels comes back.
Yeah,
I went a star and a half also. It was just whatever.
Yeah, you make a good point. You definitely get the feeling like this is over. But then it also begs the question, so why, like you've said, so this means he's going to feud with Bubba. Please, God, no. and then also it's like you come in and Rob just, I mean, you don't even get to sell it as like, well, Rob at least gets his hands on Flair because he does a little bit, but he doesn't really get much revenge on him. You know, it's not. It's just like, what was the point? It just feels like you just put another stake in RVD. Like, he doesn't come off as impressive. He just comes in. He got screwed last night. He comes in here. He kind of gets screwed again. Or not even really. He just loses again. The crowd's not into him. They kind of know that he's done, that was his shot, and he didn't get it, and now it's over. And so, you know, this was the first time, like I was saying, like Aaron talks about a lot on the year that was a lot that, you know, and it's something I've had on my mind. I'm trying to not be biased going into it and just take it as it comes. But it is an example of, I feel like after this, I definitely feel like Rob is not as over as he was before. And like, where does he go from this? Because he even says it before the match, and they're trying to play into the storyline. But he was Intercontinental Champion. That got taken away from him. He gets his title shot. He loses. He comes here. He loses again. Like, what does he do from here? Like, he's definitely not going to be better off than what he was, even though he got a title shot. It's like, I guess he could feud with Flair, but I don't know. Is there really much to that? So I'm with you. I think that's probably part of it. The crowd just knows that this is not where we're going for the next pay-per-view. This is just kind of, you know, just to cap off, I guess, what they did at Unforgiven for whatever reason. So kind of unnecessary. But anyway, we go to the post-match. They get the sledge, but Bubba saves it by getting a low blow in Triple H. Bubba goes for the power bomb to the table, and he just, man, they botched this badly. Like, he just throws, I don't know if Bubba couldn't get him up there or what, but Triple H just barely catches the corner and just, like, slides and cracks the corner off. It's kind of scary looking. Like, it looked definitely like one of those where somebody could have got cut by the table because it was just, like, the edge, the corner of it, but it looked real bad. And so RVD tries to salvage it. He goes to the top and hits the frog splash on Triple H after, which I don't know if that was, you know, I don't know if there was, he was planning to do that or like they had to do something else because the table thing just looked like shit. But anyway, even with him doing that, we talked about it during the match. Just don't think there's any juice left to this after a month of Rob not looking great. I don't know if there's really anything left to this. It's time to move on to something else. And it was all just kind of disappointing.
Yeah, that powerbomb was scary. Like, I mean, I didn't remember this at all, but like, yeah, that powerbomb, if they were planning on, I don't think they were, but if there were any plans for a long Bubba Triple H feud, I could see that ending as soon as he fucks up that powerbomb.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I was thinking that too. I was like, oh goodness, like he's gonna get chewed out. He's gonna be like the people on Tough Enough. The Triple H chewed out the people on Tough Enough or whatever in that famous segment. But anyway, that wraps up Raw. This is I don't know, Ryan. This was kind of a dull one. I feel like we didn't really just a dull episode, not really good at ring to help us out on this one. Not a lot of whole. I mean, the most storyline progression I think you could say would be the Booker T and Goldust moving on to 3-Minute Warning, because the main event stuff just kind of felt like a holdover from Unforgiven, and I guess to transition us into him going against Bubba, which doesn't seem like a big time feud. I don't know. It just felt very much like a holding pattern show. Not much going on. A lot of boring filler stuff. Actually, I may be being kind with this rating, but I went 4 out of 10. I think this is a pretty weak episode of Raw.
Yeah, I went a little higher. I went 5 out of 10, but I said the two middle matches kind of bumped it up for me. The Jericho Goldust and then the tag title change. But yeah, the ending just felt so flat. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, you really couldn't put, I guess that had to go last, like looking at the star power of the other matches, but yeah, I don't know. That RVD and Bubba versus Ric Flair and Triple H, that kind of screams hour one main event to me, not closing the show.
Yeah, especially after, you know, coming off the pay-per-view where RVD, you know, it should be, if you're going to do anything with this, if they were to accomplish anything, it should have been Flair gets, you know, RVD gets some revenge, which they kind of did that, but not in any real convincing way. But yeah, right. It was just, it just felt like a filler to move on to something else. And it was, you know, and I think that's why I went to 4, because a lot of times you could have a fun main event and it kind of bumps in and sort of can push the show a little bit, but you've kind of already had a ho-hum show and then you get like this kind of dull main event. It kind of, I don't know. Like you said, it was very flat, but we'll see again, not to, you know, cause they are two separate shows, but we'll see what the SmackDown main event, when they get a similar amount of time, and we'll see the urgency the SmackDown main event has compared to that one. So we'll move on to SmackDown. This will be the September 26, 02 SmackDown, which I didn't mention earlier, but we were from that Raw was from the pond in Anaheim. Because they are in California coming off Unforgiven. So SmackDown's going to be in San Diego when we come around the gate with Rikishi versus Chavo. So there is a little bit of history to this because there is a few weeks ago the whole like Eddie getting the stink face thing and you know, blaming Chavo. So there is something to this, I guess. But anyway, Chavo kind of gets a little bit of advantage actually in the early going as he kind of uses his savvy to get an edge and like he moves out of the way and lets Rikishi ram the ring posts. So kind of doing some classic, you know, wily little guy things to try and, you know, use some tactics, some strategy to knock down a bigger guy. But anyway, things go wrong for him when he goes for the Chavo stink face, even hikes up his underwear up his crack. But of course, Rikishi pushes him out the way. He doesn't get it. Rikishi actually goes for the rump shaker, or the bonsai drop, as I like to call it. But he actually misses it, or not misses it, but Chavo gets the knees up. And Chavo then goes for the camera, but then gets it super kicked into his face. So actually pretty nasty. And that allows Rikishi now to get the bonsai drop and actually win it. Nothing amazing, but nothing too offensive. It was fine. It was just, you know, I would have star and a half on it. It was okay. It was just, I don't know. It seems like every SmackDown you get like a Rikishi match where he goes against some random guy and usually wins. And because we have to have him dance, which of course he dances after this. So it's kind of just your normal, let Rikishi have a 5-minute match, beat somebody, and then dance. So it was all right.
Yeah, I am over Rikishi, and the only time, if Eddie's not involved, I could not care less about Chavo also. So this was not, I mean, they do okay what they are. And, you know, yeah, like you said, though, it's kind of just, well, we got to have Rikishi fight someone so he could dance at the end. And,
correct.
Yeah. And now Rikishi's thing is he has a nice hat. So at the end of when he's dancing, he puts on a hat now.
Yeah. Is this fedora? Yeah. Yeah, it was not quite the opener we got on Raw. So Raw at least beat him in the opener because I enjoyed the women's match much more. This was just like, it's kind of more what they do on SmackDown to the fight is maybe sometimes put a match out here so they can kind of run down the show.
Yeah.
This kind of felt like just something for them to talk over and kind of, you know, and then have the comedy spot with Chavo, but it was nothing much to note. But next up, we're going to get our bikini contest, which they hyped during the last match, which is going to be Tori versus Nydia. Taz is going to be the host here. And our judges, which I thought was funny, were Billy and Chuck. So they're really trying to make us like, look, guys, they're not really gay. Look at them.
They're very heterosexual.
Yeah, so like, you know. Really. Yeah, trying to hammer that home. Of course, Nydia comes out. She butters up Billy and Chuck by rubbing all over them. Tori then comes out. And so another big thing of this is that Nydia has shoes on for the bikini contest, which they really are talking about a lot here, that she has sneakers on for the bikini contest, which is weird, putting her over as, you know, if she's from the trailer, et cetera, et cetera. But Tori comes out. It's always funny to me when Taz, I know it's like a common joke with Taz, but just to see him in there, and it looks like Tori's like a good foot taller than him. Just was funny to me. He's just always... And he has his suits just crack me up. He looks like he has like a zoot suit on from like the 1940s or something. These giant pants and a super long coat. I love Taz though. But anyway, so Nydia does some ridiculous dancing because that to make sure if there's any chance of her winning that it goes right out the window by doing this weird goofy dancing. Nydia gets, of course, a 6 and a 9. Nice by Billy and Chuck. And then, of course, Tori does her routine and gets 2 10. So she wins. Jamie Noble comes out that he's pissed. He calls the crowd prejudice because not for his hot wife not winning. And he tells the crowd, nobody screws my girlfriend. And then he realizes that plenty of people screw his girlfriend. And then he says, well, not like that. And he wants to face Billy and Chuck. He wants them to face he and Tajiri, I guess, to get revenge for Nydia for being screwed over in this bikini contest. So any thoughts on this, Ryan? It was kind of just to set up the tag match. Well, to allow us to see them in bikinis and then set up the tag match.
Right. And to make sure that we know that Billy and Chuck are totally heterosexual. Yes. They're super cool guys. Yeah. It's fine. Like, yeah. Nydia's dancing is... Like, she keeps getting winded, and she drops her gum and then puts it back in.
Yeah.
It's whatever, you know. It's fine, I guess.
She does, like the Vanilla Ice, like, grab your... I don't know what that move is actually called, where you, like, grab your foot and, like, curl like up your leg.
Kick it backwards. Yeah,
that whole deal. But anyway, that sets up our tag match, like you said, Ryan, with our very, very... In case anybody's still worried... You know, they're not gay, okay? They have sweet frosted tips. But anyway, Billy and Chuck versus Tajiri Noble. Noble and Tajiri immediately go after Billy's knee, which is kind of the story throughout this whole match. And I thought they were they were really awesome with it. I loved to Jared Noble going after the knee here. They did some really cool stuff. Like, they had a nice variety of, like, using holds and then also, like, pounding it. They throw it into the post. Just nice energy and vicious to it. Really focused and on Billy's knee. We get Noble puts on, like, a figure four variation where he's got, like, kind of 1 foot putting pressure on the other one. And Billy's selling, I thought, was really good, too. Like, at one point, they go to whip him into the ropes, and he kind of just falls. Like, he doesn't even make it to the ropes because his knee just kind of buckles on him. So I thought he did a good job selling too. But he ends up escaping by hitting a flapjack on Noble, which allows the hot tag to Chuck, who it's a big belly to belly on Noble. Billy manages the Doomsday Device, the Code Red as they call it, but it's the Doomsday Device, and Billy and Chuck win this one. Nothing amazing, but I thought it was well executed. Good selling by Billy, and I really liked the leg work by the heels, and then Chuck coming in. It was kind of a typical sort of tag formula that I thought was picked up a little bit by the heels being so good, and Billy selling pretty well in this one too. Even though I guess you could argue should he have been able to do the Doomsday Device, but I guess he could kick off with one leg or whatever. It didn't bother me that much. But I went 2.5. I thought it was a solid match, Ryan.
Yeah, I went 2. I thought it was solid, yeah. Good. Noble and Tajiri, really good working that leg and just attacking it. And, yeah, I noticed they called it the Code Red. I didn't quite understand that. Like, just giving it a new name for some reason.
Yeah, my only thought would be because, like, when they're in their normal gear, they're like,
oh, it's the red.
Theme is yeah, red. That makes sense. But yeah, it's a Doomsday Device. Yeah. But
and then afterwards, Tori spanks Nydia with the very heterosexual Billy and Chuck cheering around.
Yes. That should be their new tag team name. Very heterosexual. Forget about that wedding stuff, guys. Just forget we didn't do that. It's all good. Anyway.
Just two oiled up guys hanging out together, you know. Yeah. Nothing weird about that at all.
Because they're faces now. God forbid we couldn't possibly have a tag team be gay and be faces. I mean, we could never do that, right? Anyway. All right. We head to Funaki, who is looking to interview the champion Brock Lesnar. He looks very nervous as usual. Brock actually comes out and he looks a little bit happy to talk to Funaki. Funaki says he has a very hard-hitting question to ask him because he is the number one announcer on SmackDown. Is it true that Brock won't give Taker a rematch? Brock says that is a very good question, but he wants to answer in public, so he'll answer it in the ring. And Funaki is, of course, over the moon at this because he's excited to get this big scoop. So we'll see the result of this in a second. What do you think of number one announcer Funaki, Ryan?
I think it's pretty funny. I like how before he's like kind of walking back and forth, pumping himself up to knock on Brock's door. And I did like Brock. I was expecting Heyman to answer, but getting Brock to answer is a nice little touch. And Funaki being so happy that he'll get the exclusive and, you know, really prove himself to be the number one SmackDown announcer. Was a nice cool touch.
Yeah, and I'm kind of liking they've gradually gotten away from it, and I like any time where they continue to hammer home like Brock getting away from being like a cartoonish monster heel, which kind of he was when he debuted. So anytime they could, you know, get over that he's a human, he's not just some seething like ogre or something, I kind of enjoy. So it helped in that regard too. But anyway, we now cut to Stephanie. She's working the phone as Angle heads into her office. He kisses up to her about tricking Eric Bischoff, trying to butter her up, and says that he wants a rematch with Benoit. Stephanie says that she actually has other ideas, and we now see Rey Mysterio come in. Of course, Kurt has to mess with Rey, but at the same time, he's doing the classic, like, kind of putting Rey over a little bit, or like he says something like, well, what, we're going to have Rey here just because it's his hometown, which of course gets a big pop for Rey. He makes some jokes about like child labor, because something about like Rey shouldn't be able to wrestle because he's only 8 years old or whatever. But anyway, Stephanie makes it a triple threat match, and Angle is upset because he wanted, again, so he says, just because he was born here 8 years ago, he should be in the match. So just some more classic heel Kurt. And then Rey finishes off the promo by saying that he's going to hit the 619. on Kirk to win the match later. So kind of sets up what will end up being our main event later in the show, which sounds like a pretty banging match on paper.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I liked how Kurt, he comes in buttering up Stephanie. You know he's going to ask for something, and then I noted don't you have labor laws say you can't be here for more than 5 hours?
I love Kurt. He's so good.
Yeah.
But anyway, we now head back to the ring, and we have Funaki, who's heading to the ring, and he actually has the chair that Undertaker dented over Brock's hair. So good journalism by Funaki. He's even got the actual chair to ask him about it. Yeah, good on you, Funaki. But anyway, Brock throws the chair, kicks the mic away, and Funaki actually, he bucks up to him and starts throwing hands, but then he quickly gets decimated and destroyed. And credit to him, his selling is really awesome. He's flying all over the place for Brock, like cowering and in fear and stuff. So he looked great selling it. So it was just, to put Brock over as a monster and kind of continue to put the Taker feud into and make sure it stays in the back of our heads.
Yeah, no, this was great. I mean, Brock just killing someone and making a Funaki is great. He could fly all over the ring for him. He hit like a really nice, like a fall away pump handle slam that was really cool. And then, finishing with the F5 was just a stable, like, just reminding everyone, okay, Brock might not wrestle tonight, but he could kill anyone if he wanted to.
Yeah, and I think, too, what they're trying to do with him is, by having him beat up somebody who's, like, seemingly innocent, like Funaki, I think if they want to keep him heel, at least for the time being, you kind of have to make him do some heel stuff, because if he, it's kind of been the story with Brock, even in his later run. If you just make him like a badass who destroys everybody, it's like he's going to get cheered because like people like that,
Right. Yeah.
So you have to make him do something that makes him kind of evil, so you have to do things like this where he's beating up innocent people or whatever to make him heal. Because if not, I mean, what's not to like about him? He's just like a badass who beats people up. So
yeah, he beat the Rock clean at SummerSlam. I mean, what's not to like about that guy?
Yeah, so you have to do these things. So I kind of get it from that aspect too. We then go to Dawn Marie backstage, who sarcastically congratulates Tori on winning, and pretty much says that if they maybe one day she'll face Dawn in a bikini contest and she'll have some real competition. So. Not much there. We now go to our next match, which is going to be a rematch from Unforgiven, which is a great match from Unforgiven, I should say. It's going to be Edge and Eddie, and this time it's going to be a no DQ match. So we'll buckle off for this one, because there's a lot going on this one. So we start off lots of strikes and struggle to start. Immediately really physical, though. It's really setting the tone right from the beginning, even with the strikes and the struggle. Kind of going back and forth that this is going to be quite a physical matchup. Cole really pushing right from the get-go, and he does start the entire match trying to hammer home that this is going to be the end of the feud. Like, this is going to be the end of it. Like, this will finally settle the score, that this is the final blow-off for this feud. Edge locks in an armbar, but Eddie goes right back at him, gets out of it, goes right back at him. Edge comes back at him with a scoop power slam. So just a lot of trading big moves back and forth here. And again, the thing that keeps coming through in these is that, like, all of these are really big, physical, powerful moves that look really awesome, really look high impact. But anyway, Edge finally grabs a ladder, and he goes to hit Eddie with it, but then absolutely destroys the ref, like just wrecks the ref with the ladder, like cleans his clock with the ladder, to the point where in a second, Kyoto actually comes out and replaces him as ref. So it really didn't matter to the match itself, but it didn't matter as far as, like, because there's no DQ or whatever. It didn't allow anybody to do anything. It wasn't like a ref bump in that aspect. But I thought it accomplished the goal of, like, getting over the chaos and the brutality of the match. That, one guy moved, like, the ref got hit by this ladder guy. Like, the match is so brutal that it needed two refs, because they took the first one out with just how violent the match was, which I kind of liked it in that way. But anyway, we continue on. The violence starts to ramp up here as Eddie grabs a chair. He goes for a frog splash and misses it. Just a lot of big power, a lot of big, I don't want to say powerful, but very physical spots here. Like every spot is just like super high impact. I know I keep saying that, but it's really just what kept coming through. To me, it's really what made the match. But anyway, nice run as Edge. Edge drills a power bomb when Eddie goes for a run and just drills him, spikes him right on his head, which looked nasty. Eddie sandwiches him in the ladders and does the Tope Kong Hilo, which looked really nice, like put him in between the two ladders and do it. Then he hits definitely the spot of the match by far to me, which was he goes up to the top of – he has Edge at the – he meets Edge at the top of the ladder, I should say, kind of stuns him and then hits a sunset flip power bomb from the top of the ladder, which just looked really awesome. And I should say
– Yeah, that was awesome. Just,
yeah, that was such a sick. It's the spot of the match, definitely for me. We'll have another one in a second that comes close, but I thought that one was for sure. Just the, and he's so crisp with it too, Eddie. Like he just does a perfect role. I mean, man, it was just fantastic stuff. And the crowd by this point is into a frenzy, just eating up all these huge spots. And then Eddie goes, but then Edge is able to get a little bit of energy and backdrop him into the ladder. And then gets them. They get to the top of the ladder, and Edge hits the hits a DDT off the top of the ladder. Basically, the I want to say it's the execution. I want to say
the execution.
Yeah, off the top of the ladder, which looked pretty nasty too. It looked a little sloppy, but like almost fit the match and how crazy the match was. But and that ends it and gets the win for Edge. So kind of leaves Edge on top to end the feud, even though Eddie won at the pay per view. Edge kind of wins. The blow off, or what we're told is the blow off, but man, what a physical war! It definitely wasn't a match where I thought it was, you know, which is okay. It wasn't really heavy on a lot of psychology and story, and I did think if there was any downside to it, I feel like the two hat, like I would say, like the first part, which was just kind of wrestling, and the part where they really got into the hardcore kind of brawling with the ladder and that sort of stuff, do feel a bit disconnected. Like it kind of almost feels like two matches, like they had a little bit of a regular match and then switched to an ODQ match halfway through. But either way, it was just so physical, just a complete physical war, just beating the hell out of each other. And the fact that they're doing this just on TV is insane. I thought it was a good way to end the feud, if that's what we're doing with it. I thought it was a great match. I know this is a really well-regarded one. I went 4 stars on it. I thought it was awesome, Ryan.
Yeah, I loved this match. I noted here, Edge is ripped coming out. Like, he is, like, I mean,
yeah.
A lot of guys, like 2002 was, yeah, he is just looking bigger than ever. And, like, I always thought he didn't get this cut till, like, he comes back from his neck surgery later on. But, no, he is ripped here. Yeah, it's like the first 8 minutes or so are in the ring, and you're kind of thinking then, oh, maybe there's going to be a chair used or something to end it. But no, then they go full on weapons. It's awesome. That referee ladder spot was just sick. He gets killed with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, like you said, the sunset flip powerbomb was great. The back body drop into the ladder that Eddie takes is awesome. I ended up giving it 4.5 stars. Mm-hmm. I remember it was on, I'm pretty sure it was on my GWWE list. Yeah, it was the only SmackDown match that made it was that. It was 84 on the list. This is a match like I always remembered. And, you know, back then it was, you know, now you see a SmackDown match, you can watch it, you know, the next day. But mm-hmm. this was one that it took a while for it even to get on, like, the DVD or anything. So it's kind of one of those, I think now it's well-remembered, but I think for a while it was kind of like one of those under-the-radar yeah. great matches.
You're like, why did I stop taping these?
Yeah, exactly.
No, yeah, it's such a war. And I could see the criticism on it being, you know, like maybe it's just them trading spot for spot. But I think it overcomes that with the physicality of everything they do. And you really feel, I think you feel the feud in the match. And they don't do a lot of, I didn't think any of the setups felt too, you know, I didn't feel like you saw the strings too much. Like you didn't see them setting up too many spots. They didn't get too messy with it where they're like spending tons of time setting up tables and stuff. It just looked... It's like a ladder match without needing to get to the top. They were just beating the shit out of each other and doing ladder spots, and it was just the brutality was awesome. And I thought it fit the feud because it's been a really physical, this has kind of been the tone of their entire feud, and I thought it was a good cap to it. But yeah, just I don't know, awesome. It's it's awesome. Yeah, I can't really call it a hidden gem because I don't think it's really hidden. I think it's a pretty well known match. But just awesome stuff from these guys. But I will say that it is, I don't think it's a forgotten feud, but maybe a little bit under the radar. This Edge and Eddie feud from this time period, maybe it's not one that people always remember super well just because of everything else maybe going on SmackDown. But yeah, just awesome stuff.
Plus, I think there's SummerSlam matches. It's good, but it's, overshadowed on that card. Mm-hmm. And then, the other two matches are Unforgiven, which is kind of an overlooked show, and then on SmackDown. So I think it's not something that it's not a feud you automatically think of when you think of this time period.
Yeah, I do kind of like how I always like when you do have a series of good to great matches like this. I like how this escalates. Like, I would say, if I were to say the order of how good they are, this is the best, then Unforgiven is second, and then SummerSlam would be the third best. So I kind of like how they escalate as it goes, and they get better and better as time goes on. That's always kind of cool. Because a lot of times it could be sort of diminishing returns, but I think with them, they got each progressive match just got better and better. Because I really enjoyed the Unforgiven one, but I like this one just a bit more just because of the and I like that it's two different matches. The Unforgiven match was much more of a kind of a classic ring psychology, working the limb sort of thing. And then this is kind of a brawl, not really a brawl, but more of a, weapons and big spots and stuff. So it kind of, if you are going to do this, these two, have them have these big matches back to back. I do like doing it in two totally different ways. I think works pretty well, too. It makes it not feel stale. But
right.
Awesome stuff. So, and again, to go back to what we saw in Raw, where you have two guys, where you just kind of have two talented guys, and they go out and give you a solid match, but you're not necessarily getting, something like this, like a classic, which I know you're not going to get all the time, but it's hard not to compare. But anyway,
right?
We'll keep going. Mark Lloyd now is going to be speaking with Benoit, who puts over Angle and says that he's going to beat him. And it was just basically Benoit putting over Angle, but then says he's going to beat him. Pretty standard promo. We then go to Matt Hardy, who is a lot of people showing other people VCR tapes on these shows. Huh? The same thing on Raw. Now we have Matt Hardy with his VCR schooling Shannon Moore, showing him some film. Just continuing delusional Matt Hardy 1.0 stuff, where he's saying that that the reason Brock ran away was because of him. And then Shannon Moore questions you don't think it was Undertaker? And he's like, no, Shannon, you have a lot to learn about this business. So I continue to like the Matt Hardy delusional character.
Yeah, this was really, it was pretty funny. And I also, Benoit actually made me laugh. I know that makes me a bad person, but when the first thing he says to Mark Lloyd is just, you suck. Is what the people chant for Kurt Angle. I thought that was pretty humorous.
Because he's not usually one to do a whole lot of, but I guess in this Kurt feud, he's kind of getting more into that because Kurt is kind of goofy at times.
Yeah, I think Kurt just brings it out in whoever he's feuding with, kind of.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's fine. It is what it is, But anyway, we'll go to our next match, which is going to be Taker versus Matt Hardy. So, of course, Taker has had ongoing issues with Matt Hardy because he's kind of been a thorn in his side during this whole Brock feud. And so this is similar to what we saw early with Rico and Booker, where you think, Matt gets a little bit going. He goes after the leg a little bit, but then he just completely gets destroyed. Taker quickly turns on him and gets the last ride. Kind of a squash match. I gave it a star. It was just Undertaker getting his revenge on Matt Hardy. And it was pretty much just to set up the post-match angle, which we'll talk about in a minute. Any thoughts on this match? Not much to it, Ryan.
Yeah, I gave it a star also, just a squash. Real quick, right before the match, they showed the WrestleMania 19 press conference.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
I thought it was really odd. The Undertaker comes out wearing a button-up polo shirt. He's the one guy that, you could see him just wearing what he wrestles in, but I guess
he wanted to dress up for the big press conference. Yeah. But yeah, the match itself was fine.
Business casual.
Yeah.
Undertaker. Yeah, I forgot about it. I didn't write that down. But yeah, that was it was a pretty long segment too. It's just them like they had like everybody there too at that thing. I mean like
yeah, and I wonder like
the whole roster. Yeah.
I wonder if when that was like if it was maybe the Wednesday after the taping or something because yeah, it was probably either then or that Thursday I guess because if both Raw and SmackDown guys are there, it couldn't be Tuesday obviously.
Yeah, yeah, I would assume probably. But yeah, it's a huge, like, it, you know, because sometimes they do things like that and you might have one or two guys, like, big stars there or something. But I feel like they had everybody. Like, they had clips of, like, everybody from Angle to Taker to, you know, Triple H was there.
Triple H, yeah.
Yeah, they had everybody. They were going all in on it. It is, and when I saw that, I was thinking, you know, it seems so far away, but it's really not. You're getting into the fall. Soon enough, you'll be... It'll be the Rumble, and we'll be on the road to WrestleMania 19.
Right.
Some would say the greatest WrestleMania of all time.
Someone should do a podcast about that.
Yeah. But anyway, the post-match, Brock immediately runs in. He rams Taker with the belt and busts him open. It almost makes it seem like Matt Hardy was only a decoy for this and just cracks Taker with the belt, busts him open. Taker does a pretty nasty blade job considering, for – just on weekly TV, which I have to give him, as this continues, you know, I know the story was like Taker didn't want to put him over at Unforgiven or whatever I talked about in that podcast, but he's really putting a lot into this feud. And like right here, he like blades. It's like he can't get to his feet. They even show him in the back, like frustrated. It almost reminded me of like an image of like when you have a boxer or something and the guys are trying to calm him down. And that sort of thing, because he's like bleeding and they're trying to get him to just sit down and calm himself and that sort of thing. Kind of had that energy to it. But I mean, he was really bleeding. It was a pretty savage blade job for just, you know, a SmackDown.
Yeah, that was a really gory blade job. I was surprised they even like were able to do that. And, you know, this was still a UPN SmackDown. Yeah. So, yeah, that was pretty hardcore. I thought it was really good. Like, it kind of shows like even the Undertaker is vulnerable against Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you know, they didn't spend a whole lot of time on the Brock Taker stuff during this, but I thought it was effective. And where we said earlier, you know, they were doing the RVD Triple H stuff, and we know that looks like it's kind of dead in the water and it's not going any further. This, I thought, did enough to let you know, no, this is not over. And it was kind of Brock getting his revenge for getting the chair caved in on his head. And so all of it's not really heavy handed, which I kind of liked on this show. You know, like I thought they were able to build stuff like with this feud without, you know, they don't really go in and do super long promos, but you kind of got the reminder earlier when Funaki brings out the dinner chair to kind of remind you what happened at the pay-per-view. And then you have Brock coming out here to kind of get his revenge, and it lets you know. And I think it kind of ups the violence. They already kind of started upping the violence at Unforgiven with, you know, Taker with the chair. And now you have Brock busting him open. So I think it's a nice little build to where they're going with this feud because we know where they're headed. So that they're up in the violence and the brutality because it's going to make sense to where they're going to go for No Mercy, which I thought was cool. And they accomplished it. Like, you know, it's very efficient, I guess is the way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with that, we're already at our main event. The SmackDown has cruised by, which I guess a lot of it was in that Eddie Edge match, which got a good 15, 20 minutes. But anyway, we hit our triple threat, which is going to be Angle versus Ray versus Benoit. Kurt trolls San Diego before the match. He made some basically like saying that something about, I forget what he says. He made some joke about immigration or something. Just Kurt healing off as always. But so this one, I'm not going to try and do any kind of play-by-play because there's just so much. But it was just a nice flow in this one because essentially how the match went, and like I was saying, this is like a sub-10-minute match. So kind of similar to what we saw on Raw in the main event. But they really get into this nice flow where you get they do like a standard sort of triple threat sort of thing where you have two guys battling and then you know, one guy breaks it up. But the way they did it, I thought fit the story, because you kind of have Angle and Benoit where they're so focused on each other because they're in this feud that they kind of forget about Ray. And it kind of fits too, because Ray is a smaller guy. So they kind of just keep tossing, like literally tossing Ray out of the ring, like over the top. And he kind of similar to what we saw with Trish in that match earlier, where he just gets tossed out. And so they kind of get into this flow where Benoit and Angle are kind of doing their thing, which is always awesome. Just going after each other, kind of doing their suplexes and all that sort of stuff. But then Ray comes in and he kind of adds a lot of movement and come hits his high spots and shows his speed. And they kind of keep doing that over and over again. And Ray just keeps getting at it, even though they keep tossing him. And just insane act, like insane pace to this. Like Angle and Benoit are doing, like I said, what they do, like kind of what we saw on the pay-per-view. But then you have Ray constantly coming in, hitting his high spots. Just everything is you know, high impact, super physical. It just like, I love the whole story of them constantly forgetting about Ray until finally it kind of culminates with Ray coming in. They're doing Kurt has him in the ankle lock. Benoit gets the ropes. And so Benoit's kind of clutching the ropes. Angle's kind of puts him in a headlock to try and pull him back off or something. And so they kind of are in the 619 position, and Ray comes in and hits the 619. And they kind of throw him away again, but then he comes back off the ropes, hits the West Coast Pop, and ends up getting the win. And so I kind of like that thread. Even though this is a short match, I still like that they were able to, even with all the cool spots they were doing, and so there were insane spots throughout. Like, I can't sit here and name all of them, but I kind of like that story that went through the match of them constantly throwing Ray out. It was almost like they were so caught up with each other that eventually it caught up to them and Ray's able to win the match, which I thought was a really cool little kind of little thread. But yeah, just awesome action for the whole. And again, I mean, you're going to be hard pressed to find like a sub 10 minute match this good, like on TV. I ended up going 3 3/4 on it, maybe just a hair lower than the Edge and Eddie match, but really a great match. And again, to do this in only about 8 minutes or so that they had is just incredible how much they were to pack in here. I thought it was real fun stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this was really good. I also gave it 3 3/4. The one, like you said, they keep throwing Ray out of the ring, but there's one time where he runs at Kurt for like a Hurricanrana, and Kurt just like alley-oops him out of the ring onto that glass. Oh, and that is just amazing. Like, it almost looks like Ray kind of just missed the ropes also, but he ends up hitting it, and he gets right up and runs right back in the ring. And I just love Kurt and Rey Mysterio matches, like the SummerSlam match, and anytime they get in there, it's awesome. And then, like, they cut, like, a lot of the match is them trying to do a Benoit and Angle match, and then just Rey trying to pick his spots and come in. And yeah, I thought it was awesome. It's kind of weird how, like, Rey just kind of feels like a special attraction at this point. He's not really feuding with anyone at the moment, but I mean, it's kind of fitting because he still has been in less than 2 months, probably 3 months. So they're still trying to find the footing for him, but just having him come out and wrestle these two guys is good. And it's also like both Benoit and Angle could have had wins, so now they could, like, it continues their feud because each of them could say the other guy cost him this match. And yeah, Ray gets the nice little shining moment in his hometown, which is unusual for the WWF, but yeah, good on them for letting the hometown hero win for once.
Yeah, it's a cool thing because on the surface, it kind of doesn't seem like they focused. Like, if you just think of it as, you know, people doing interviews or promos or something to build a feud, you know, they didn't do a whole lot of that. But I think this match in itself, like you just laid out, because now you have the issue, kind of furthers the issue with Angle and Benoit. But then if you want, you can kind of insert Ray in here now, because he kind of can say that he won, and maybe they're going to be pissed at him because maybe they're going to be, you know, pissed at each other and then also pissed off at him because he cost both of them the match. So it's kind of like you're doing a lot of, you're kind of pushing the storylines within the match, which is, you know, when you can do that, I think you're really firing on all cylinders, because it's kind of ideally what you want to be able to do, is to be able to push things, you know, to have a great match that also pushes the storyline along is kind of the ideal thing that you're trying to accomplish, I would think. And so it kind of works on that level too. And it kind of elevates. I think they've done a good job with Ray because they're kind of slowly elevating him in, because he kind of started doing more sort of cruiserweight sort of stuff. Then he's been with Angle. Now he's set up with this. Yeah, it's good stuff. I enjoyed it. Just an awesome main event to cap off, which has been a really good show, I would think. A well-paced show for sure. What would you say? So how would you rank this? So we obviously have two, you know, great matches on this one that took up a majority. What would be your overall thoughts on this one, Ryan?
I gave it an 8 out of 10 just mm-hmm. because I do think up until at least the Funaki interview with Brock, I thought the first two matches were kind of, well, the first two matches and then also the bikini match were just kind of, not killing time, but like, just kind of there. And then it gets like all time good, I think, the last hour of the show or so.
No, I agree with you. I'm right there with you. I think I'm going to go 8 out of 10 as well. Because like I said, it's, you don't feel necessarily on the surface is a lot of story progression. Like, I think you look at this on the surface and say, well, yeah, it has really two really awesome matches, but you know, those are just matches. But I think it also pushes a lot of stuff. I think the build to the Brock and Taker stuff was good. It kind of keeps that heated. And like, you're always going to have a few little, you know, you're going to have some filler matches on a 2-hour TV show. Not everything's, you know, it's just the nature of it. So I think that's right. Fine. But yeah, 8 out of 10. It's hard to think of an episode of TV being much better than this. I mean, you have two great matches. You're pushing your main event storyline across, keeping that heated. And like I said, I really like the kind of relying on a little bit more in the matches to build the feuds and what's going on in the ring. Like, guys are still getting time on the mic, but it's kind of kept a little bit to a minimum. I think it keeps the story, the pace going along. I find sometimes they're accomplishing things that maybe on Raw, they might take a 10-minute interview to do. And instead they have on SmackDown, they'll do a 2-minute interview and then kind of build some things more in the ring, which makes for kind of a better pace show. But they're really, I found with this show too, they're really starting to establish the identity of what SmackDown's going to be. They just have these awesome athletes. You're going to get a lot of awesome in-ring action, super physical, high impact stuff, kind of pushing this new style in WWE of kind of this more athletic based stuff. And I feel like this is the episode that's really camera at home. Like, I feel like this is like the coming out party for the SmackDown 6.
Yeah, I agree. This is really showing, like, this is what SmackDown's going to be. It's going to be a lot of intense action with, I wouldn't say minimal storyline, but the storylines are pretty basic, but that's sometimes all you need.
Yeah. It weirdly gives me, like, I don't know why, when I was watching this, it gave me, like, 89 WCW vibes for some reason.
Yeah.
Where you just have a loaded roster of guys who are all super talented. And, you know, even, you know, to think that that you have Angle and Benoit and all these guys, and that's not even the title. That's like your mid card. It's kind of insane. Right. And, you know, you have an awesome main event going right now, and you have these guys killing the card. It's just, they feel very loaded right now, which is why I think that it's okay if they spare Randy Orton. I think they'll be okay. But
yeah,
I think, I definitely think it's the best SmackDown I've seen thus far. I'd have to go back and look, but I don't know if anything's beaten this one. But yeah, definitely, I think, like you said, an all-time great, kind of a historic one. Good stuff. But with that, we will go to our awards, which I have a feeling we're going to be pretty on the same page with. I think best match, we both have Eddie and Edge, I want to say.
Definitely, yeah. Although, I mean, honorable mention to the SmackDown main event. Most weeks that would win, but...
Yep.
Not this time.
Yeah, it was close for me. It was close. Because I only had the Eddie Edge match at 4, so quarter star away. But anyway, best moment, I usually go with something out of the ring. But I think for this, I'm going to have to go with the sunset flip from the ladder. I mean, it's hard to not say that was the most memorable thing from the show.
Yeah, that's what I have also, the sunset flip into the powerbomb.
Yeah. That was sick. Best show. I think this is an easy one. I think we're both going to go SmackDown based on our ratings. again, tale of two shows for this one. The greatest differential, I would say, maybe to the start of the pod. Who knows? I'd have to go look. But LVP, I went with this was tough for me. I kind of went with Rico just because I feel like he's kind of in position like he might be some, but then he kind of just ends up being nothing. I don't know. What'd you have for LVP, Ryan? Help me out.
I ended up going with Chavo just because I can't stand him.
Yeah, Chavo's when he gets I'll never forget that episode I watched a while back where there was just a guy in the crowd, and you just see it like Chavo's on the ramp, and the crowd's kind of quiet. And you hear one guy go, "You suck, Chavo," which always sticks with me. MVP, I'm gonna go with Eddie.
Yeah, I went with Eddie also. Just I think he does a little. I mean, not more in the match. It just seems like he takes a little bit more punishment, and he gets the standing ovation at the end, which is pretty cool for. I mean, he is a heel, so to get a standing ovation just based on a match is pretty good.
Yeah, I think I give credit to Edge. I wouldn't call it, by no means did Eddie like carry him or anything.
Right. No.
I think Eddie stands out a little bit more in that, which is fine. I mean, Edge is still kind of feeling him, you know, trying to establish himself as a singles guy, so it's fine.
And I mean, Eddie's always going to stand out usually, no matter who he's in the ring with. So.
Yeah, he just has that. That it factor. So top five. So five other people besides. I guess we'll both try and find people besides Eddie for our top five standout performers. So I think I had Edge. I'm assuming you probably had Edge too.
I had Edge. Yep.
Yep.
I had Ray. Yep. Ray.
Yeah. Keep going.
I had Rey Mysterio, Kurt Angle. Mm-hmm. I had Brock, and then I felt like I had to put someone on from Raw, so I put Trish on because I think she had like a nice little showing. She's the face of the women's division there, so she's doing the best with what she's being given, I thought.
Yeah, Brock is a good one. I think Brock would probably be good. I put Noble just because I always enjoy Noble, and my obligated Raw pick, like you, I had to get one Raw person. I put Booker T just because I feel like he's having a good little face run on Raw. But I kind of ready for him to get elevated a little bit. I mean, we'll see what happens. But I want Booker T. But definitely, I think it's hard not to include everybody from the Triple Threat and from the in Edge and Eddie. And so it doesn't leave many spots left. But yeah, awesome SmackDown, man. Not so great Raw, but. Anyway, that wraps us up, Ryan. Ryan, do you have anything that you would like to plug?
Yeah, sure. On the Place to Be Wrestling feed, me and my wife Cindy are doing it's with this ring. We were watching what we're doing now is taking one WCW wrestler and kind of looking at a few of his matches and kind of breaking them down for the GWCW project. And then on the PTBN pop feed, I am in the champion of champions match for the trivia night, the finale of that, which will be airing sometime this coming week, I think.
Awesome. Yeah, I forgot to mention off the top, Ryan, you're the trivia, it's kind of like your something you're known for in our
little. Yeah, it's my calling card.
Yeah, it's your calling card as the trivia king. So I was a little nervous going through my notes, make sure, because chances are if I got anything wrong, you probably knew. You can fact check me. But anyway, that's all awesome. Thanks for coming on, Ryan. I hope you had a good time. I'll definitely have you back. Yeah, but other than that, we'll be check out everything on the North South feed, of course, and I'll be back in 2 weeks as we'll continue the trek towards No Mercy, and I have a feeling that things are going to start getting really weird on Raw pretty soon, if my memory serves me right, so we'll see how all that plays out, but of course, thanks for coming on, Ryan, and thanks everybody for listening, but again, I'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. See you later.
Thanks for having me.